So to the Buddha for refuge I go, for protection, for shelter. To the Dharma for shelter, for refuge I go. And in the thing that sort of gets conjured up through that is sort of like a mountain refuge in a blizzard, as it were. You can sort of imagine that sort of you have these mountainside refuges where you just sort of go in and shelter from the sort of blizzard of life, the struggles and vicissitudes of worldly life, that you can go for refuge to the Buddha and the Dharma to make sense of what's happening in life, to make sense of and to get perspective on what's happening in life. So really what we're doing when we say Buddhang Saranam Gacchami, it's sort of to the Buddha for refuge I go, but in the spirit of that, it's a protection, it's safety, it's a refuge from and a refuge to go to, because it not only protects, but it develops, it grows, it pulls us on, really. I must be careful. My tendency is to talk about what we're moving away from, as opposed to what we're moving towards. So I would like to emphasize just at this point that, you know, we're moving towards the ideal of a Buddha, the ideal of a human being, the human being perfected, human qualities perfected. So we're moving towards a life that is more dominated in its ultimate sense, completely dominated by concern for others, by compassion, by generosity, by contentment and stillness and simplicity, and by awareness. You just take a moment to imagine if our lives were completely orientated in that manner, what a completely different world we'd live in, what a completely different experience that we would have. If we just really took on that a movement towards the Buddha implies a movement towards a life dominated by generosity, by kindness, by consideration and compassion. And a movement towards understanding, a movement towards wisdom, a movement towards how things really are, really seeing what the Buddha's key teaching was, the teaching of conditionality, that all things arise in dependence on conditions, that conditions not being present, things do not arise, that things cease when the conditions that support them cease. And finally, to the Sangha, we're moving towards associating with people who share the values and who share this momentum, this want to bring more love into life, to want to bring more consideration and awareness into life. So a movement towards the Buddha means these things. A movement towards the ideal of the Buddha means these things. In a certain way, it's the middle part that always gets me, the movement towards the truth, or the notion of conditionality, also communicated as impermanence. So you could say that all things arise in dependence on conditions, or you could say all things are impermanent. I was particularly struck recently as I received a letter from the pensions agency. It's interesting how the view that I hold of stopping work in the ideal, in my fantasy life, is wonderful. But when the pensions agency sends you a letter to say you have to decide whether you're retiring at 55 or 65, and you need to decide by next March, actually it takes on a whole new meaning. Suddenly, the truth that I have less years left on this planet than I've lived starts to dawn on me. The idea that 7 years' time I've given my age away, that I might be needing to retire. Retirement has all of these connotations that I'd not really taken on. I'd always thought about it as some kind of extended holiday, where I wouldn't really have to do too much. In my fantasy, I'll come and teach here a lot more and go on retreat more. But actually, what's arisen is a degree of fear, a degree of anxiety. Will I have the means to support myself? How long will I live for? Will I be healthy? All of these things start to emerge. So what was this sort of marvellous rose-tinted extended holiday suddenly starts to take on a different meaning. And in a certain way, when we go for refuge to the Buddha, when we go for refuge to the Dharma, it means that we need to start thinking about, firstly, our habitual ways of seeing things. How do we see the world? How do we see our lives? What is important? And what are we doing with our lives? What are we giving our minds to? What are we spending our time doing? Very quickly, that time will start to ebb away. I am in the midst of a bit of a wobble about that. It's just very interesting. It's kind of exhilarating as well. I think that's probably the benefit of a lot of meditation and a dharmic perspective, perhaps. This is the truth. The truth is that, you might not have too many more years left on the planet. So what are you going to do with them? So that's very alive for me at the moment. So it's, what am I habitually involved in that's allowed me to coast into this fantasy about this extended holiday? And what am I habitually doing in my life that's estranging me from awareness, that's estranging me from kindness, that's estranging me from really getting to grips with the things that are important to me? And then there's this other piece, which really is, what am I actually going for refuge to? Am I placing my trust in Tia? Or whatever other sort of distraction or pursuit that takes me out of depth of experience and takes me into distraction, that makes me drift to the surface of my being. What is it that's taking my attention? I think the world is full of things that will take our attention, that will distract us. We need to decide, we need to notice that. We need to notice that. If we really want to go for refuge, we have to get to grips with the things that make us more superficial, that distract us, that take us out of experience. Oftentimes, it's the case that we experience a slight, as I have a slight wobble or a little bit of anxiety, and the first thing we do is reach for pleasure. We reach for something that solves it, that makes it a little bit easier. That's my tendency anyway. So I reach for a favourite DVD that gets me out of my experience, or I go and meet a friend and we have a good giggle, or all of these things might be pleasurable. If I notice what I'm doing really, I'm taking myself away from the reality of the experience that's in front of me. So it's worthwhile considering, what is it that's helping us stay superficial? what's helping us stay on the surface of our being, what's distracting us. The biggest risk that we have today from going into depth in spiritual practice is distraction. There's so much of it out there, there's so much that's grabbing our attention. There's so much that we're told that we need, that's important, that will make our lives better. And we kind of have to take the responsibility for noticing that. And noticing what effect the things that we do have on our lives, have on our mental states, have on our emotional life, and how they take us, are they taking us into depth and into engagement and into a life fully lived, or are they taking us away? What's the momentum? What's the direction in our lives? And finally, through our sort of habitual engagement with these distractions and drifting to the surface of our being, the overall effect of it is vagueness. You know, we can stay kind of vague about what's important to us. We can be so distracted we never really think deeply about anything. And we never really get into relationship with what really makes and creates depth and meaning in our lives. Because we've got this momentum towards doing and experiencing that takes us away from our immediate experience, that fills up our life very pleasurably, but it can be a life half-lived if we don't start to really notice what brings more importance and meaning and value into life. Now, I feel like I've ranted a bit there, I must say. apologies if that sounds preachy. But really, it's been something I've been turning over in my mind in terms of actually the thing, these three momentums, these three things of habit, superficiality and vagueness, are Sangharachita's sort of worldly versions of the three alternatives, the three fetters that hold us back in this life, to hold us, that stop us from breaking free from our habitual self-orientated ways of behaving. And I think they speak quite eloquently to the type of world we're at risk of being run by, rather than the type of person that we choose to be. So what is it? What person are we choosing to be in this life? Is a key question when we consider what the meaning of going for refuge is. Yeah. What brings us more into relationship with the ideal of the Buddha? What brings us more into relationship with the ideal of the Dharma? And what brings us more into relationship with like-minded people? I'll just pause there and see if there are any responses to that or questions.
What's a distraction?
A distraction. So I think really it's anything that's taking us away from experiencing what's happening right now. So it's our mind has the capacity to distract us from distraction with distraction. Our mind has the unending capacity for creating thoughts, perspectives, and a momentum into, even you could say, phantasmagoria, you know, a real elaborate conflation of experience. And actually, what we're trying to do, if in developing awareness, is just see that tendency playing out, and really getting to grips with what effect is that having on us? Is it pleasurable? Is this bringing pleasure and happiness into life? Just a question. It's worthwhile thinking about it, noticing that. What brings pleasure and happiness into life? And I would encourage, as a way of exploring that, of really getting into some conditions where we can experience ourselves more fully. So Buddhists willingly put themselves in conditions. Sort of an act of going for refuge is to put yourself in conditions where you experience yourself more fully. So go on retreat. The commercial break continues. So, mate, perhaps most of us are in this room because something of the Dharma has resonated with us. Something of the teaching of the Buddha or something someone has said resonated with us. Or perhaps some of us are looking for a way to make sense of our lives. That was certainly true for me. Some of us will be inspired by the wisdom and the relationships that Buddhism has made between modern physics and mindfulness and the more ecumenical expressions of the Dharma. And some of us will have had keen experiences of suffering, which has caused a turning about in our lives. There are many ways to the Dharma. There are many ways that inspire that initial act, that initial turning about, or going for refuge, that initial moment where you think, I've got to change my life. I've got to do something different here. I've got to make sense of this world and make sense of my life in a different way than I have been doing. And so we go searching for something. And my search brought me here. Your search has perhaps brought you here. There are many different routes to here. There are many different journeys to going for refuge. I couldn't possibly do justice to all of them. They're as individual as we are. But if we're really honest about it, and if we look at the Buddhist tradition, what the Buddha taught, or at least the medium in which he chose to discuss or teach going for refuge, was going for refuge from suffering, going for refuge from that sense of unsatisfactoriness, that sense of dis-ease that seems to punctuate most of our lives. It's particularly, I suppose it's a particularly important consideration when we start to think about suffering. And it's not because it's difficult, it's not because it might be painful, but it's because in dependence on it, we start to see the way things really are. We start to wake up to the fact that the way we live our lives and the way we choose to do things, or the way we don't choose, more is often the point. It's often we're doing something or in the flow of something before we even realised we're doing it because we've got such a momentum towards some things, has a particular effect on our lives. So what is suffering? What is suffering? What are we going for refuge from? So any ideas? I'm doing a lot of talking. I need to do some talking. What is suffering?
I'm not sure who said it, but the mind forged mindfulness. The mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know.
What does that mean to you?
It's not as extreme for me as that sense. But it's certainly like when things are going well, you can still find yourself being irritated, being envious, comparing yourself. same old, same old, craving, feeling needy, and then, you know, that's even, you know, I have everything, theoretically, in the West, and yet, so I think it's that sort of sense of and yet, really.
Anybody else have a sense of it? It was very eloquent.
The pit of doom.
The pit of doom.
I was one of those in the pit of doom. Mm. Yeah, these kind of constant negative thought patterns and a kind of real sense of being stuck there and not being able to get out.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. It's a big pit.
So we come for refuge, try and find a way out.
I think it's interesting how that transforms, actually, because you can you go for refuge for different things, because of course that might be sort of initial motivation that's quite different for me now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's not static. What pulls us on, or our relationship towards our experience develops and changes over time. In a certain sense, as we explore or go for refuge more fully, we grow bigger in a certain way. As awareness expands, we grow to be able to hold more of ourselves. And our relationship towards our experience develops and changes too. Yeah, I think you're right.
It's kind of difficult to let go of, I think, because it gives me a feeling of, I don't know, uniqueness sometimes. I feel like my suffering is unique. And for some reason that makes me not want to let go of it, or I feel like I can't get out of it, because nobody's suffering like I have.
Yes. So we can have a sense of real strength of being. Through our strength of holding on. This can be a very... In one way, I wonder whether we contract around the sort of potency of our own suffering sometimes, and it gives us a stronger sense of ourselves. It's in some way a little... it just gives us that real sense of aliveness in a quite painful way, but it gives us a stronger sense of ourselves.
So is it our ego that we're going to refuge from?
What do you think? I wonder sometimes whether what we're doing in life is a whole act of going for refuge to ourselves, as it were. We are continuously finding things that reinforce, validate, strengthen our sense of ourselves, that make us more sure, more certain. We're looking for things that strengthen that sense of self. We gather and appropriate things, ideas, views, attitudes that give that increased momentum, that make it stronger and stronger, more habitual even as we go through life. We'll notice as we get older, you know, people will say you get set in your ways. They also say change your samskaras while you're young, you know. Change those volitions while you're young, or at least cultivate the practice of continuously changing while you're young. Because so in a certain way, one of the sort of principal acts of our life that we're doing is we're going for refuge to ourselves. We're creating the refuge and security of ourselves. And what we're trying to do by going for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha is simply open up. Simply, because we most of us have a sense that that going for refuge, that shrinking, that contracting down around views, attitudes, beliefs, emotions, body, volitions, that sort of contracting down, that potency is somehow stifling. Is somehow we know it's we experience a disease around it because we know our want is to expand. Our want is to grow, to develop, to become bigger. Yes? And so we experience this tension between the act of going for refuge to ourselves and at the same time this battle to want to open up, to expand, to follow the natural human tendency to go out, to open up. And what Buddhist practice is helping us to do is to loosen. There's a wonderful image that Sangharacha uses in Living Wisely that the ego is like a closed hand. And you know the Buddhist definition of the being is body, feelings, volitions, perceptions, and what's the other one? Consciousness. Thank you. There you go. And all we're trying to do is that. Just open up. In a sense, become bigger. Become open. And engage more and more in the open dimension of being. In a way, what the Buddha is a human being that's continually opening, continually unfolding into experience, that is not limited by views, by attitudes, by even mind, not limited by those definitions of mine. So what we're trying to do in going for refuge is to engage more and more with that act of opening, and coming into relationship with that open dimension of being. How does that sit?
It's a question. Why would you think if it seems like what's causing the suffering? It seems that's what comes natural from what we're all doing. We're trying to practice to move away from that.
Mm.
But if it's what comes natural, then how come we keep doing it?
Mm.
And how come everybody does it?
Mm-hmm. In a sense, what do you think? Or does anybody else have a view on that before? I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking. It'd be good if you did.
I was going to say it's almost like an acceptance of suffering rather than moving away from it. It's almost like the same thing to do.
What do you think, Doc?
When you were talking and Doyle's question, I just thought, I was never really taught to open up.
Mm.
You know, it was just nobody around me when I was growing up was talking like this.
Mm.
And I think that's what, you know, the first thing that I resonated with was it felt true to be more open rather than sort of, you know, there were two options in my childhood. There was sort of like, look after yourself or trust big powerful God and he'll look after you. So I think for me, like your question, Gloria, for me it was like I just never had the option. So of course I sort of looked after myself. I went after, you know, after developing me and sort of I think that's why I got to the state that I was when I arrived here, because I never really got told, oh, there's this other option. You could just try opening up to the world and not grabbing on so tightly, and it seemed quite natural once I was told that, but it never really got told. I never really got told that while I was growing up. So for me,
but it doesn't seem so natural in the sense that it's widespread in the world.
Doesn't
it?
That's it. I mean, we are trying to. We all have this momentum towards selfing, towards willing. if we experience any sense of anything in the world, we experience, you know, the denial of somebody in our way, very, very quickly we experience the full force of our will of wanting to get what we need. Yeah? In a certain way, I think sometimes there's a conditioning that we won't get our needs met somehow, that there's in even a sense of lack of trust in the world, lack of trust in the universe, maybe, so that our needs might be.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah. There is a strong survival instinct, and that keeps on getting reinforced by the act of appropriating things that cause pleasure and pushing away things that cause pain. And so gradually over time we strengthen that sense of potency and contraction by regularly reinforcing the pushing away of negative experience and the pulling towards us of positive experiences. And we create ourselves over and over again through those habits. So it becomes what in just trying to get to the point of considering ourselves as not the centre of the universe and considering there are other people in the universe too, it's sort of turning this supertanker of willing around 180 degrees. And it's quite a piece of work. It is quite a piece of work. It's not necessarily straightforward. And that's why we, and particularly in a world which is taking us in the completely opposite direction, which is why putting ourselves in conditions where we can start to settle down, to come into, as I was saying in the tea break, to come into relationship with the more depth in our being, more depth of appreciation of what's really important to us, to not be continually pulled to the surface of our being, but to really descend into depth, and then to see the world from that place. It then becomes much clearer what's important to us. And we can only discover that through being in those conditions. I know you have, and many of us have, through being on retreat or in community or just in great communication with somebody, just in beautiful communication, or in the simplicity and rampant beauty of nature, or in relation to refined artistic pursuits, or it can be in many situations that we start to experience the depth of our being and in that our potential. You know, that we start seeing there's more to us and there's more to life than a new TV or the next haircut or I'm trying to think of the next accessory or a new pair of trousers or whatever, the next boyfriend or girlfriend or
heels.
Yeah, it's more to life than heels. So, I think, so we have, there's the objective suffering. There's the objective suffering. There's the pain that you can't do anything about. There's the stubbing of your toe. There's the pain that naturally comes with life, of having a body that is at its peak at a very young age, and then it's sort of all downhill from there. Much as we try to perfect it continuously, it aches in all kinds of places. We don't want it to. But that's the natural prison. The Buddha's just pointing that out and said that this body is frail. This body is fragile. Notice that. Notice that. Just notice it. Notice it with a sense of kindness, with a sense of patient, kindly forbearance. This is the absolute pivotal importance of the metta bhavana. So we can have a balanced perspective on what it is that's happening in our lives, and particularly in our bodies as we're growing older, you know, and the discs start bulging in the vertebra and the arms go numb, and when you're sleeping they wake you up, and then, you know, if you're a boy you have to get up in the middle of the night to pee, and, you know, and it goes on. So that's the objective physical suffering that we're trying to that we're just meeting. We can't do anything about that. But then there's a psychological level of suffering. In a way, this is best defined by anxiety. The anxiety that goes with you know, the sort of the thought of retiring and you know, being not well, or somehow that our needs won't be met, and there's no objective truth to it. It's almost like, you know, Kabat-Zinn, you know, didn't just for any old reason call his book Full Catastrophe Living, but we're great at catastrophizing, aren't we? You know, from practically nothing, you know, somebody just have to look at us in the wrong way, and suddenly we've got this whole story around it that causes terrible amounts of anguish. And then we talk to the person, and there's nothing about that at all. You know, we've invented the whole thing. And so we sort of undo ourselves psychologically. We add suffering on top of the objective problem with the body, for example, the objective effects of our aging, sickness, and ultimately of death. But we add to it unnecessarily. And this is particularly important why metta and mindfulness are important, because we can start to question, we can start to reframe our relationship to our mind and experience and what we do, if we can simply just get a bit of space in relation to it. You know, we're not being anxiety, we can just say, oh, I feel a bit anxious, what's that about? We can sort of show a benign, positive interest in it. So, yeah, here's that thought again. Yeah, yeah, you know, you do this quite regularly to yourself, don't you? So let's see if we can do that differently. So you can change. We can change. I include myself in this wholeheartedly. I'm great at staying awake at night worrying about stuff. So, but it goes deeper than that. It goes much deeper than that. There's an existential level of suffering. There's the suffering that is about the unique disease of the human condition, which is that that we, in a certain way, it goes all the way down to our unconditioned nature. It's not just that we're conditioned, but we are potentially Buddhas, and we're not, but we know we could be in our deepest selves. We know we have the capacities, and the, you know, at our deepest selves, in our deepest, sort of deeper than we can feel, deeper than we can know, we know that we want to grow, we know we want to develop, we know we want to open up. But we're limited by our views, our attitudes, our perceptions, and we enclose ourselves in a sort of prison of views, in habitual emotional responses. And we experience that as a sense of, I don't know quite what I need. You know, it's sort of not quite palpable to, it's not quite cognizable, but you taste it. You sort of experience it as a sort of, well, I experience it as a sort of, just a sort of subtle unrest, even in the midst of immensely positive experience. There's that sort of, so you're in that wonderful concert, and you're completely taken away with it, and then suddenly there's just this something. You know what I mean. Yeah? I can see you've all experienced it. And And we're always, in some degree, engaged with that. And this, you know, this is the product of our going for refuge to ourselves. So, what to do? What to do? Well, that's sort of the end of the discussion, really. The meaning of going for refuge. I think, actually, the path from this comes back to those three qualities. Looking at our habits. Looking at the habitual ways that we estrange ourselves from that which brings most meaning and value into our lives. What is it that we, who is the human being we really want to be? What qualities do we really want to bring into being? You know? And sometimes we need help by having an ideal. You know, how can we imaginatively connect with the ideal of the Buddha? In a sense, having that ideal and cultivating a sense of connection with the qualities, usually through the stories in the historical Buddha's life, they're beautiful, they're inspiring. We can perhaps avail ourselves of some of those. And really get to grips with what it is that that we're doing in life that leads us into an awareness, that leads us into a sense of dullness, that leads us into superficial behaviours and superficial encounters. You know, if we're in a relationship, for example, particularly if we're in a long-term relationship, it's very easy for us to start taking each other for granted. It's very easy for us to, and I'm speaking from my own experience here, it's very easy to just sort of habitually relate to each other in a sort of very codependent way, that we both have our roles, and we both just simply go through the motions of our relationship. When did we actually really talk about something last? When did we really get into serious communication about what's important to both of us? Most of the time, we're just sort of trying to get our needs met and for the least outlay possible. It's true. So what is it that's going to get us out of that sort of habitual superficiality? You know, how are we really going to engage with the world? How are we really going to engage with ourselves? How are we really going to engage with others? And then finally, getting clear on what it is that we want to spend our lives doing. What brings more awareness into life and doing that more? What works to alleviate suffering? What works to bring us into more, cultivate more positive emotion into our lives and the world, into our relationships? What works? Well, generosity works. Generosity works. Going against that natural tendency to shrink and finding ways to go out to people and finding that juicy edge where we're resisting. Where that sort of juicy edge of resistance where it's like, yeah, I've been terribly generous here and no more. No more. And then just staying there for a little while. Sort of exercising the generosity muscle, as it were. So when I know I'm obviously coming on to ethics here, so we have the ideal of enlightenment, the sort of sense of going for refuge, getting clear on the qualities of the Buddha and the principles that a Buddhist life involves, and then ethics is secondary. You know, really questioning what our lives should be full of, and then lifestyle is tertiary, lifestyle but also important. Yeah. What are we doing in our lives? How are we bringing that more and more into our lives? Because that's what's going to make a difference for us. That's what's going to alleviate our suffering now and create a future which is more meaningful, full of depth, and more creative, less habitual. So I think we should stop there.